Wi-Fi Sci-Fi.
Wi-Fi Sci-Fi.
Wi-Fi Sci-Fi.
What is Wi-Fi Sci-Fi?
It's Girl in Space.
Tales of Sage and Savant.
The Ninth World Journal.
Oz 9.
Moon Base Theta. Out.
It's Girl in Space.
Wi-Fi Sci-Fi.
What is Wi-Fi Sci-Fi?
Find out at wifisci-fi.org.
Wi-Fi Sci-Fi.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Discussing Comics. I am Kyle Jones, and joining me again on this podcast, let's welcome back first Lee Shackelford. Lee, how are you?
I'm grand.
Well, glad that you're grand. I'm glad you're here. Yeah. So what's been going on with you?
Getting the fifth and final season of Relativity up and out. It's a challenge. It's some complicated audio editing, so I've been hunkered down with my headphones on. I know you know the drill.
I know the drill, and I'm going to hold that thought because since you, unfortunately, aren't on Discussing Comics as much as you are on Discussing Who, I want to bring back this discussion to Relativity in just a moment in our news. But having said that, it would not be complete if I could not say, welcome back also, Clarence Brown. Clarence, what's going on with you?
Oh, man, it seems like I'm not on Discussing Comics as much either. But I'm doing fantastically well.
Well, I'm doing fantastically well that I am on here on a Tuesday night, normal recording night, for Discussing Who, but we're discussing comics, and it's the three of us, so that is super cool for me.
Feels like Discussing Who.
Yes, it does feel like Discussing Who, and for anyone listening who just has joined us as part of Discussing Comics, if you're brand new to this show, I would say if you're a Doctor Who fan, or if you're interested in Doctor Who and want to learn more about Doctor Who, you can check us, the three of us, out on Discussing Who. We are currently in series four. We just finished series four, but we're in the 2009 specials leading up to the end of time itself.
That sounds, yeah. We have a podcast that's going to take you up to the end of time itself.
Yes, and beyond even.
Beyond even.
Yes, and beyond the end of time even. But I want to get into the news, and the news, first and foremost, again, like I said, I want to bring this back to Relativity for anyone who is a fan of Discussing Comics who has not had the opportunity to hear us talk about Relativity on Discussing Who. Lee, what is Relativity and what is about to happen in Relativity?
Relativity is a sci-fi serial audio drama that I just released. To my patrons, episode 41. So it's been going on for a while. Each episode is about 15 minutes long. So that's not a bewildering amount of time if you want to binge and catch up. But my pitch line is that it's the story of a man and a woman, a man in deep space, marooned on a giant ship, and the woman back on Earth who fights tirelessly to keep him alive. It has grown exponentially over the last few years and has become kind of a thing. So I'm pleased and honored that it has become so popular and widely downloaded. And we're going into our fifth and final season. And I released episode 41 to patrons today, and I have been enjoying the day of fan mail. And it's very gratifying. And of course, because it's a serial drama, every episode ends on a cliffhanger. So my fan mail is also tinged with, you bastard. there's always that tone too.
So I want to mention, one thing that you did not mention, which is not only do you write this, you also star in it. And in these episodes, starting, I think, within second season or maybe just a little bit in first, you were joined by another co-star, Mr. Clarence Brown, who's also here. So you guys have created this tapestry of characters that I am so excited to find out how this story ends. So I'm like waiting and can't wait to hear this all play out.
And you gave voice to a character that I had originally thought would just be sort of a single voice, and we would never hear that again. But in writing these, it struck me there's a great opportunity for that character to come back. So as we go along in this season, we'll hear Kyle again.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. So
yeah, that was a spoiler.
Yeah, but for people who don't know which character Kyle played, it wouldn't be because we didn't say who he was.
I guess not. No. Mm-hmm. Still, I got to be careful about that. So
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
And I have to say, I was indeed giddy when I saw the new episode drop on my Patreon account.
Yay!
So I was happy, and yeah, it made work a little more pleasant today.
Also, Clarence, you've listened, I'm assuming.
Oh yeah, definitely. As soon as I could. Okay.
That's worth it right there, you know.
and you know, it's something that has been a pleasure for me to listen to you guys, knowing that I know, and I've said this so many times on our other show, but it's worth saying again, knowing the voices of Clarence and knowing the voices of Lee and hearing you guys take these voices and make them into these characters where I forget that these are my friends talking. I'm learning them as these other characters. And Lee, you are professionally trained, so I'm going to give you a bye there. But Clarence, for you, it's amazing to listen to you as you have progressed as a voice actor for someone who, with Lee and yourself, is mostly self-taught. And I marvel at that. So kudos to you, my friend.
Oh, man, it's all about the director / writer / producer over there. So I deserve no props, sir.
And let's say that in the process of editing, we all end up sounding really good.
There you go.
So Clarence does 3 or 4 takes of everything, and I pick the best one. And when I sit down to do my stuff, I've either got 1 or 2 takes, but I'll also just say, I don't like that, and I'll cut it out. I'll change the script to accommodate something where I say, I didn't like the way I said that. I'm changing the script. So,
yeah,
you know, always
the glories of post-production.
It's so wonderful.
Yeah.
If you've been listening to David Tennant's podcast, I can't remember, Nicole Mazza would remember. There's one episode where he's got somebody who's being a little shy about sitting down in front of the microphone. And he says, you know, don't worry about it because, you know, we'll record this. But before it goes out, they'll run it all through those compressors that make you sound a lot sexier than you really are. So every time I do a compression on our voices, I think about that. And here's what makes it sound a lot sexier than we really are.
You know, that's funny that you said that, because at the end of every episode, I have this little 6 or 7 second blurb that says you are listening to the Disgusting, and I actually like that. I actually like my voice in that.
It sounds really good. Yeah.
And it's only because I totally redid my voice, but it's like I like it. Yeah, exactly. You know, but I'm no joker. I will say that, and I'm going to do a little segue here because I have a simple question. Have you guys seen The Joker? Are you planning on seeing it, or have you not, or you have no desire to see it? Just curious.
Have not, don't plan to.
Okay. Clarence, what about you?
Have not, but I do plan to see it because I've heard good things. I mean, it's a very different movie, and I just want to go along for the ride. I think it'll be pretty good. And I've, you know, read and heard pretty decent things about it.
I'm more in the I haven't seen it. I keep hearing things. I don't plan to, but chances are I will eventually break down and watch it. But I had a conversation with a gentleman that lives next door to me a couple of days ago, and he was asking me, had I seen it? And my response to him was, I don't know if I want to see a movie where someone who should have no redeemable qualities is the protagonist of the movie.
Well, did you like Dark Knight?
Yes.
Well, you know, the screenwriter over here is going to tell you the Joker is the protagonist of that story.
Mm.
It's a movie about the Joker.
Maybe.
Yeah. So I mean, I understand and agree with you completely. I just don't want to, it feels to me like getting down into the mud and wallowing around for 2 hours. And I don't like that. It's also why I wasn't interested in seeing Suicide Squad. That doesn't interest me, but I don't know.
Well, what about Batwoman? There is a new Batwoman TV show out on the CW, and I'm curious if the two of you have seen Batwoman yet.
I've actually seen the character or the woman that's portraying her. I've seen her in the last Crisis. Well, not in the last Crisis, but the last crossover event for CW. I believe she was in there.
She was. You're right.
But I do like the actor. I think she used to be on Orange Is the New Black, and I'm excited to see more of her in the role, but I have not been watching thus far.
All right. So I think there's two episodes out. I did watch the first episode on demand, and it wasn't bad. It wasn't like I was going, ooh, I can't wait to see the next episode. But on the flip, it wasn't like I turned it off halfway, you know, in the middle of it. It was an interesting take. They basically set up this story where Batman has left Gotham City and his cousin, Kate Kane, comes and says, okay, well, I'm going to be the new Batman, but I'm going to be Batwoman. So that's it in a nutshell. I just don't know if it will be a long-term success. I don't know if it has enough story to be a bat show when Batwoman doesn't really, I don't think, have a lot of story backstory to sustain.
Did you say bat story?
Backstory.
I'm sorry. I'm bad.
Good one. I just don't know, but it wasn't bad. I will say.
Yeah, I mean, well, since Arrow is going away, they may be trying to fill in some of the gaps going forward. So,
yeah. The feeling is we have to have a DC show in there somewhere.
Yeah. True. I will say that I am getting caught up on Legends of Tomorrow to get caught up before Crisis. And I just passed the episode where they made reference to not being on the crossover last season. So I thought that was kind of cool. But Clarence, I have a question for you. You have seen the most recent episode of Titans, and I'm curious to know what your thoughts were.
Man, I think it's a good exploration of the character of Connor. It is Connor Kent, right?
You are correct, sir.
Yeah, which is the clone hybrid of Superman and Lex Luthor. And man, I had never really heard much of that story, but I do think they did an excellent job in this episode of Titans, where they kind of explore the turmoil or the two warring halves pulling at this super being. So I really love that. I thought it was well done. And we got a good surprise at the end of the episode where they kind of tied it into the rest of the episodes, and you really didn't see it coming. So I really, you know, if you are able to watch Titans, I would say start with that episode, and and maybe it'll make you want to watch something else, because I think it is a pretty good standalone episode as it goes.
Absolutely. Up until those last 30 seconds, I was going to say that by easily it felt like it was nothing more than a pilot for Superboy to have his own series, which I thought would have been cool.
Yeah, I agree.
So cool. Well, before we get into our main content of the night, I want to say for everyone listening, if you are not subscribed to Discussing Comics, please go out, subscribe using Apple Podcasts, using Stitcher, or whatever the podcast player of your choice may be. And also, please give us a rating. Give us a 5-star rating if you can, if you would. And also leave us a review. That will help us get discovered. And if you leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, we will read it on the show. So go out, put us on pause, go out and do that. We would very much appreciate it. Then come back, because we are about to get into the main content, which is ours, because we want to hear from you. So send us your feedback and let us know what your top five are going to be. But this is our top five favorite superheroes. And I pretty much left the criteria open to say, didn't really matter the genre. It was whoever and however you defined who your top five were. So, Lee, question for you. What was your criteria in selecting your top five? Did you have one, or did they just come to you?
I think once I looked at my list, I realized that for me, it was about what have these characters meant to me personally, as maybe not as role models, but as how have their stories touched or moved me or inspired me as the years have gone by. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. So, Clarence, what about you? What was your criteria?
Yeah, I think I come at it very differently. Growing up, I really wasn't into comics, and I don't even think I'm into them now other than the highly popularized movies. Thank you, Marvel. But there are a few in there that I find that I really love. So it's kind of the few that I know that I really love to the core, and then others that I can see are popular for certain reasons, and I do gravitate to them slightly. What about you, man?
Okay, so I found that giving myself the ultimatum of saying five means I have to justify. And that was the hardest part of justifying. And I think I swung to the thought process that Lee had, was which characters have been with me the longest, and if they've been with me the longest, why, and what is the impact they've had on me? So that was my thought process.
So I have a question. If okay. We just want to look at the huge comic book shops, does each of us have both DC and Marvel people on our list? I'm just curious.
I
you don't
do.
Have to say who, but
I do.
I do as well.
All right, Lee, what about you?
Interestingly, no.
Wow. Okay.
No.
So I don't know. I am going to speculate that you are not going to have anyone from the distinguished competition, that you will be all about the House of Ideas.
You would be correct, with one exception.
With one exception. Oh, okay. I bet
I'll also add that I have somebody that's not on either. But
there you go.
Ah, sweet. Okay, see, this is what makes this so much fun.
That's right. This is what I was hoping for.
All right, excellent. All right, so let's start out with number five. And I'm going to start with Clarence. Who is your number five?
Again, like I said, the higher I get up in my list, I look more for people or characters that I like, but might not necessarily are that influential to me, but I know they're popular and I know I like the character somewhat. And the first one is Black Panther, T'Challa, based on the MCU movies. I really knew very little about Black Panther before those movies, but to see what that race of, well, what his country represents and being the king of this country, I just fell in love with it. I didn't know the story of his backstory, of his powers, the magical flower, whatever you want to call it. I just love it all. And to be surprised by something, a character like this, as with, I believe, many other people in America were surprised by this character that's been around a long time, but he managed to come onto the scene and just, you know, grab the hearts and minds of a lot of people. So Black Panther, that's my number five.
Awesome. So Lee, you're number five.
I wonder how often this is going to happen, but my number five was T'Challa, King of Wakanda.
Awesome.
Also known as the Black Panther, and has been for as long as I can remember. Because being a little older than Clarence and being a big fan of the Fantastic Four, which is the book where he was introduced, I don't remember a time when I didn't know about the Black Panther. And growing up in, I mean, we're all from the Deep South, right? Growing up in Alabama, just at the end of segregation, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were blowing my little mind. I had to be an adult to really take in fully what they were doing, but they were saying what would happen to this whole race of people if they didn't have the economic disadvantages that Black people have in America? This is what you'd get. And that's such a radical statement. That's such a in-your-face to the white establishment. You know, and I didn't get that in, you know, when I was 8 years old, of course, but isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? And T'Challa, as we have known him over the years, is not only sort of infinitely wise, but he's also incredibly generous. And those are the two qualities that I always experienced of him in the book. So yeah, he had to be on my top five list.
See, now you guys are making me feel shallow.
Because you don't have...
I don't have T'Challa on my list. So, I will say that my number five actually kind of surprised me a little bit. And my number five is Connor Kent, Superboy.
Interesting.
And here's the reason why. This is a character that was introduced in part of Reign of the Superman after the famous Death of Superman arc. Yes. And he was originally, you know, presented as this brat of a kid that they knew from the beginning he's a clone, and you didn't know who the other part of the clone. Of course, you knew it was, you know, Superman clone. But it wasn't until 2003 when Geoff Johns took over writing the Teen Titans, and they took this character from being a bratty kid to, they aged him a little bit, put him in the black t-shirt and jeans that he had in Titans, and then they gave him this adopted persona of Connor Kent and said, hey, he's the cousin of Clark and all this, and he's living in Smallville. And I don't know, I just connected with the character and I just thought he was cool. And then I love the way that you made Superboy as a relevant character and not be, oh, this is Superman when he was a teenager and these are his adventures. You made him a character that to me was interesting, that stood on his own. And because of those things, it, you know, said that, hey, I really like this character. And the other thing was, I really got pissed off when they killed him off, and then I was happy when they brought him back. And then when the new 52 came around, I was ticked off when they basically rewrote his story. And then I was really, really happy in Rebirth when they brought him back. So I was like, okay, there has to be some connection here that I'm happy and pissed, or happy and pissed. So I said, he's my number five.
There you go.
Well, let me ask you, we got a little taste of him dealing with his warring halves in the Titans episode. Is that something that has always been a part of his character?
Yes, except for New 52. It's always been a part of his character that it was, you know, half Luther, half Clark, you know, or half Superman. It's always been that. They did away with that in New 52, but now they've brought that back in since Rebirth.
But is part of his existence struggling with that, though?
He actually, for a while, succumbed to his darker side, shaved his head, and started, you know, being evil for a little while.
Cool.
All right. Number four. So, Clarence, why don't you start this time? Number four.
I guess I'll stay with the supers, and I'll say Superman. And I mean, when you think of superheroes, he is just kind of the superhero, the quintessential superhero in every facet. For me, I always look to the Superman movies that, you know, were around when I was growing up. I mean, that was pretty much my first real strong taste of, you know, superheroes. And man, I think of when he was falling in love with Lois, or fell in love with Lois, and he renounced his powers lost his powers. I can't
Superman
remember.
Superman too. Yeah.
Yep.
And he keeps them up for her.
And man, that whole sequence when he goes through the thing with the bullies and he, you know, gets his powers back and goes back and you know, wreaks havoc against those guys. I just love that sequence. And then I have to fast forward to the early aughts with Tom Welling playing Superman. I'm holding up quotes here because I don't know if he was actually ever Superman, but He's playing Clark Kent in Smallville. And, you know, that show ran 10 seasons, and I pretty much watched every episode. Huge fan of it. So, yeah, I would have to put Superman up there as well at number four.
And let me say, just a mention, the Supergirl, or excuse me, the Lois Lane in Smallville, to me, was the best Lois Lane that we've ever seen. Just my personal thoughts. All right. Lee Shackelford, what say you? You're number four.
I'm going to blow your mind here, I hope.
Okay.
My number four favorite superhero, once I sat down and really started thinking about it, is Prince Namor the Submariner.
All righty. As the Dalek would say, explain.
Well, he has often been a villain, but he has also often been a hero. And the fact that he vacillates back and forth is kind of fascinating. He was originally conceived as by Bill Everett, who's one of those comics creators who I think is often overlooked when we're talking about the, you know, the early days. But he was an outright villain. He was a monster. It was a monster movie sort of comic book, and you had this horrible guy. But his problem is that humans have not been good to the oceans. And so for me, coming up and reading comics in the 70s with a growing environmental awareness, I'm discovering these Golden Age books and thinking, you know, I think the dude is right. And then later on, when he was reintroduced to the Marvel universe, his beef was that we had done atomic testing underwater, which of course we actually did used to do, and we had destroyed his kingdom. He's like last son of Krypton. Well, he's the last son of Atlantis. And he claims that Namor means the avenging sun. So he's back to trying to take over the surface world because he thinks he's entitled to it. And but what happened in the interval was World War II. And he had to agree that the guys with the U-boats, they've got to be the bad guys. So he becomes an ally. And you know, is one of the members of a superhero group called the Defenders, and so he fought on our side in World War II, and so he floats back in and out of the narrative sometimes as a good guy, sometimes as somebody that you really want to have on your team. And I just always found him very interesting. Very interesting character.
And if you don't mind, because someone is listening and they're going to message us and say that there is a correction. That yes, you are 100% correct that he was a founding member of the Defenders. However, in that particular era that you're referring to, he was a member with Captain America and Bucky in the Invaders.
The Invaders. That's right. Very good. Yes. Yeah. The Defenders will come later. Very good. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Very interesting choice. And One thing that I would like to add to Namor is he's also considered a mutant.
Yeah.
So yeah. he could live on Krakoa.
Is that a retcon later?
I think it is, isn't it?
Well, when we first saw him and we first saw his undersea kingdom, most of the inhabitants looked like fish. Some did not so much. So clearly there were some genetic abnormalities, and he was one of them. He did not represent the norm. Most of his subjects look like fish, anthropomorphic fish with legs and that could talk and so on. But yeah.
And speaking of legs, is particularly ankles. I always found it interesting that he had wings on his ankles.
On his ankles, yes. Which shouldn't work, of course, but apparently they do for him. But you know, this kind of touches back to Captain Marvel, aka Shazam. I guess that comes from the image from mythology of Mercury, who has wings on his heels, and you still see that in the logo of the florist delivery service FTD, that they have a winged Mercury. You look for the wings on his heels. So there you go.
Cool. All right, so for my number four is going to be Spider-Man, but not the Spider-Man you're probably expecting. My number four Spider-Man is going to be a character by the name of Miles Morales. And the reason that I put Miles on my list was he, to me, even though there have been other Spider-Men that they have created that have been alternate versions of Peter Parker, or they've been Gwen Stacy as Spider-Man, yeah, quote unquote, or you've had Spider-Man 2099 with Miguel O'Hara that is still semi-around, none of them have, in my opinion, reached mainstream popularity and has had the impact that Miles Morales has had. And the fact that he was created in 2011, so we're not even 10 years into his existence. He's already had his own movie. He has been moved from the Ultimate Universe that he was created to into the main 616 universe. He has a different costume. He's got different powers. I think for all of those reasons, I think he deserved to be on my list. And the fact that, again, that he's not a Peter Parker clone, he's his own character, I just really like the character, and that's why I put him on there.
Awesome.
All right.
Yeah, very good. Yep. Can't argue with that.
Sweet. So we're halfway through number three. So I'm going to go back to Clarence. Number three, who was your number three?
Okay, it's time for me to go off the beaten path a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's not that much of a stretch, I don't think. Mr. Luke Skywalker himself.
Huh.
And I have to really think about this. Is he a superhero? Is he a superhero? Well, he has abilities that other people around him don't have or don't display.
Yeah.
He's very courageous. He has a code that he lives by. So, yeah, I think you can consider Luke Skywalker a superhero. And he definitely battles darkness, evil. So, yeah, certainly him as being one of the first superheroes that I knew of growing up, along with Superman, you know, he's in there as well. And yeah, man, I just love everything about Luke Skywalker. The Jedi have amazed me ever since I've been a little kid, and I always wanted the laser sword, as we used to call them. So yeah, man, I hope we get some redemption for him in the next movie. But man, the hero's journey that we see with Luke Skywalker, I think, is something that anyone should really admire and want to experience. So yeah, Luke Skywalker.
Mm. So I'm going to say why I think you are 100% right that he needs to be considered a superhero. I took a course when I was in college on epic stories, or and they used the story of Star Wars as being a modern day, like, hero's journey. And that was, you know, what he, being Luke, went on. And I think you have every right to include Luke Skywalker.
I use Luke to teach the hero's journey as well. And for all those reasons, it is the classic. It is the classic hero's journey. Clarence, do you think is he a superhero in The Last Jedi?
He is a hero in crisis.
Yeah, I'll buy that. Yeah, because a lot of people were complaining that he's not heroic, but until the end, But
yeah, well, he does make the ultimate sacrifice at the end. Oh, spoiler, sorry guys. Conversation's over on that. But I don't know. I'll agree with Mark Hamill in his own assessment of the script. For The Last Jedi, I don't think this is the way Luke should act, which is kind of what he told Rian Johnson, the director, writer of Last Jedi. So I don't know. I'm just looking for if JJ manages to redeem him in The Rise of Skywalker, I'll just count it as, you know, a not so great ending, but a great redemption.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Lee, what say you?
Oh, my number three?
Yes.
I'm also going to depart from Marvel superheroes this one time to talk about a superhero who never had a comic book.
Okay.
He didn't begin in the comics, but he began in the pages of newspaper supplements that some newspapers had pages and pages of different comic books, but one of the publishers in the 40s instead would on Sunday include a comic book. And the lead feature in that was Will Eisner's The Spirit.
Ah.
And I love The Spirit. I love him as a character. But I think the reason why I and so many other people love The Spirit is because the drawing, that the art is sometimes just eye-popping, just completely gorgeous. And Eisner's way of telling a story is so cinematic and so intriguing that he really, really wanted to tell stories that nobody else was telling. And astonishingly violent for its day is The Spirit. It's just glorious. And it's the only comic that I have assiduously collected, that I've tried to get, you know, literally every appearance of The Spirit that I can. So I've got an attic full of Spirits. And I did meet Will Eisner, who's, I guess he's the only one of these comics creators that I've actually, shaken the hand of. And he autographed one of the Spirit books for me. And then later I learned that those books were made while he was in the Army. And so the artist in that book was Jack Cole. So I had Will Eisner autograph a book that he didn't actually write or draw. But, you know, he signed it. So whatever.
Wow.
Anyway.
Is it still in print?
Various people have had the rights and have reprinted Spirit strips. And then several people have tried to pick up the series and take it on. It never really takes off and flies. And of course there was a feature film that I think is an abomination. It's just, it's just so not The Spirit. I mean, it's it is not in the spirit. No, it really doesn't. It's Frank Miller. It's like he missed everything that made The Spirit what it is. Mm. And I think all of us who were real fans of the book sort of came to the movie and said, are we reading the same book?
Wow. Because
anyway, so The Spirit, cannot recommend highly enough. Check him out. Denny Colt is his name, and he is nominally a superhero. I guess I have sort of the same struggle we have to with the Luke Skywalker, because his only superpower is that everybody thinks he's dead. He was killed, but he was killed in a chemical laboratory, and he fell into a vat that would instead put him into suspended animation, and he woke up in his coffin, worked his way out, and he's turned his coffin, his gravesite, into the doorway to his secret underground laboratory hideout. So
that's cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah. He can literally come and go through his coffin door. So he's The Spirit.
Yeah. Oh, that is too cool. That right there just sounds cool.
Now warning also, because this is the 40s, his sidekick, at least in the early strips, is a little cartoon black boy with a white ring around his mouth, whose name is Ebony White. And he for sure talk like, the step and fetch it kind of. So, and it's another one of those things where you have to say, well, it was a different day. Ebony is, he's not stupid. He's a really smart little guy and a tough, scrappy little dude. And frequently the Spirit leans on Ebony, who's supposed to be like 9 or 10 years old, you know. But yeah, he is the kind of little lawn jockey cartoon black boy. And it's about the only thing about the Spirit that makes me wince when I look at it. But I don't know. But I thought I should mention that.
All righty. Well, I have been intrigued over the coffin is the door to your grave is the door to your hideout. I just think that's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
All right. So speaking of graves and maybe not being in it, my number three, when I started reading a certain book, was not around. And all the characters in the book talked about this character with such reverence. And it was like so intriguing to be reading this book and knowing and hearing about this character and thinking, oh, wow, wouldn't it be nice to meet or, you know, like read more about this character instead of going back into, you know, reading old comics or trying to find old comics. And then in January 1986 in Fantastic Four number 286, this character returned in a comic entitled Like a Phoenix. So my number three is none other than Jean Grey. So she is number three. Yep.
I can't believe.
And it was all because of that setup that I gave you is, you know, reading about this character and not having this character, you know, or having Jean around and hearing the X-Men speak so reverently of her. When I finally did see her, it was like, oh, wow. It was like you were meeting somebody important.
That's right.
You know, and, you know, just for years, and the way they set up her return in the book X-Factor, it was probably from 86 to 89 or 90 or maybe even 91 before she and the X-Men came face to face. And it was just so cool. I'm picturing and getting chills of this scene with her and Storm seeing each other again for the first time. And that was just like so freaking cool. So Jean Grey is my number three. All right. Number two. So Lee, who was your number two?
Coming in at number two. Because I am of a certain age and because I grew up reading the books I did, it's got to be Peter Parker, the Amazing Spider-Man. Because when I was growing up, of course, he was still in high school, you know, and he was allowed to grow up just enough to go off to college. And so the Peter Parker that I knew and love and that I still know and love is the one who is dating Gwen Stacy and is fascinated by Mary Jane Watson, who is a real weirdo in those days. And he has his feeble aunt at home. And, he was the hard luck Harry. And I love that. Well, I guess Harry Osborn was the hard luck Harry, but the expression, you know, everything happens to Peter. And the original concept was that becoming Spider-Man liberated him and gave him this alter ego who was everything that he isn't, that he was outgoing and sassy and, you know, gets to make smart ass remarks to people as he's beating the crap out of them. And, it's just brilliant. But at the same time, being Spider-Man is a curse. Yeah. Everything bad that happens to him because he's Spider-Man and he can't tell anybody. And it's that dilemma and the way it was being depicted. It was just entrancing to me. And I learned a lot about writing serial drama from what Stanley and others in the office were doing at the time. Talk about ending on cliffhangers, man. They kept you jerking along from month to month. And sometimes I thought I wasn't going to live from one month to the next until I found out what was happening to poor Peter, because, you know, it was always something. Anyway, so that's my number two.
All right. So, Clarence, who is your number two?
Oh, man. My number two is also Spider-Man, but. It's going to be one of those bastardized clones Cal was talking about earlier. Man, you know what? The point in my life when I had a brief stint of actually reading comic books, going into the local K&B, yeah, that used to be a store, guys, to pick up issues.
Trust me, been there, bought them.
It was to pick up the Ben Reilly Spider-Man books. Now, I haven't read anything past when he dies in the newer stuff. They brought him back, but I reason to have this blonde haired guy with this cool suit, which I still think is the best Spider-Man suit, frolicking around and taking Peter Parker's place because now he thinks he is the real Peter Parker, and the real Peter Parker is stricken or sick. I can't remember exactly. But yeah, that's when I first started reading comic books was that Clone Saga slash I think Onslaught was going on at the time as well. Right. Yeah, so yeah, that's why I really like that version of Spider-Man. And I'm going to give an honorable mention to Tobey Maguire because he's my favorite live action Spider-Man so far.
Get out. Cool. So for me, my number two is a character that I'm going to go back to the X-Men again, who first caught my interest in Spider-Man and the Amazing Friends of the X-Men themselves. And this was probably 1981, so I would have been about 6, 8, 7, 8 years old. And I remember seeing this black woman with long white hair, blue eyes, and who could control the weather. And it's obviously Storm. And then when I started reading the comics, I started getting into the comics about 2 or 3 issues before Storm lost her powers. So my introduction to Storm in the comic form was the Mohawk Storm in the leather outfit, and she's kicking butt and leading the X-Men without any powers. She is challenged by Cyclops for leadership of the team and beats him as just a normal person for leadership. And that she is just, to me, one of the best X-Men of all time. So that is my number two, Storm.
It's interesting that we haven't picked the people with sort of colossal superpower. Clarence did mention Superman. Yeah. But the reason why he's not on my list at all, and I think it's strange, is that, like Clarence, to me, Superman has got to be Christopher Reeve. Other than that, especially in that first movie, I had trouble caring about him. In the Golden Age comics, you know, in the Siegel and Schuster days, he can be kind of a jerk. He's deliberately teasing Lois Lane with how attractive he is, and then he plays around with this fact that in his secret identity, he's always asking her for a date. She's always turning Clark down because, you know, it's Superman. Why is he doing this to her? Yeah. And it's just a funny idea. And then, of course, as his powers kept expanding through the 60s and the radio show and the TV show and so on, it became harder to find things that he couldn't do. So we have to invent kryptonite. By the time I started reading Superman, kryptonite had taken on flavors.
Literally
taken on flavors because Streaky the super cat ate some, you remember. But red kryptonite affects him differently every time. Whatever. The only thing to do with the strip was to start making him silly. Mm. And it's, I feel like he's never recovered from that. And then we had to make him dark and sinister, you know. I don't know. It just seems funny to me that I can't say that I'm a big Superman fan, even though I've got scads of Superman comic books and, you know, I've been drawing him all of my life, but I guess it's the writing. I guess it's the script that I have a problem with. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we didn't choose any, we haven't so far anyway, chosen any of the other people who can move planets and, things like that. Isn't that interesting that we're interested in the people who are a little more like us?
Yeah.
Your Luke Skywalkers and, you know.
And one thing I noticed as well is I don't believe we've chose a lot of characters with secret identities.
Miles would have. And yeah, Peter would.
Yeah, Peter certainly does. But and the spirits deal is that Denny Colt is dead. So, he can't let anybody find out that that's who he is. But it's not. Namor is Namor. All he has to do is wake up in the morning to be the same.
And Black Panther is a title, not necessarily a hero identity.
Yeah, but it's certainly not a secret.
The X-Men don't have secret identities either. So,
You know, they kind of flirted with that in the early days of the comic, and it was very quickly abandoned.
Yeah. You know,
I always liked that Stan Lee said that he couldn't keep that going in the X-Men for the same reason he never flirted with secret identities in the Fantastic Four, because he said, I have to be realistic. If I had a superpower, I'd tell everybody because I'm too big of a show off. I wouldn't be able to.
Good point.
Yeah, you know, just being real.
So let's get really real. The ultimate, the number one. And I'm going to start out and say who my number one was.
Go for it.
So again, considering that I was born in 1973, look about when I'm starting first to remember things and seeing things on television. And one of the first superheroes that I remember is seeing Linda Carter as Wonder Woman. And that fascinated me and got me hooked on superheroes in general. So from seeing her on TV to seeing her in, or quote unquote, her in the Super Friends, I just was fascinated by wanting to know more about superheroes. So from Wonder Woman, my obsession with superheroes began. So she has to be my number one, because without her, I don't think I would have gotten, or I might not be sitting here talking about comic books today. Mm. That's what started my fascination, was Linda Carter's Wonder Woman. So she's my number one.
Has Wonder Woman stood the test of time for you?
I think she has, because A, I still get her comic. B, I was totally psyched to see Donna Troy on Titans. And three, I think they continuously reinvent her. And the fact that she is the only female superhero who has started in the 30s, or actually, take that back, she started in 41, and within the entire time frame of that, minus 6 months after Crisis on Infinite Earths, she has had a comic book in publication throughout that time. For that right there, she has to be my number one.
Yeah, it really is remarkable to think about the tenacity with which Wonder Woman has hung on, and it is because they've constantly changed her and sort of updated her, and sometimes without, you know, sometimes I think to disastrous effect. But
yes, white jumpsuit, Kung Fu Wonder Woman.
Exactly. Yeah, I would say, you know, interesting way to go. But But I don't think any of us have any qualms with the current with Gal Gadot and the way she's depicted in the current movies.
And it's sad that yes, we did get the Wonder Woman TV show. But it took within the last 5 years of us recording this in 2019 to have a Wonder Woman proper TV, movie, big screen.
Film, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's true.
So Wonder Woman is my number one. So Lee, who is your number one?
I think you know, but you're just humoring me. But like you, it is probably the reason why I was reading comics, because I saw a TV show on Saturday morning, and one of the people in it was this gravel-voiced pile of orange rocks, Benjamin J. Grimm, the ever-loving blue-eyed thing. And that took me to my local comics vendor and started reading the Fantastic Four, and the FF have been at the center of my comics fandom ever since, but particularly Ben, the monster with a heart of gold. And yeah.
So let me ask you this.
I can't say enough about Ben. So
did you get a little bit deflated when you started reading and he didn't, slap his fist together and do the saying, Ben Ring, do its thing or whatever? Wait, you were actually seeing the Fantastic Four. I'm years later in that, what I'm talking about. You were actually talking about the Fantastic Four cartoon.
Yes, I'm talking about back in the day.
Yes.
The derivative thing where there was the kid who could become the thing was,
Only lasted 13 episodes, I think.
I put that down the same hole with the Fantastic Four animated series that didn't have the Human Torch in it because his rights were tied up in development with another studio. So anyway.
Sweet. So The Thing. Cool. Yeah. May I ask why The Thing? Why not Mr. Fantastic? Why not Sue? Why not the hero of the whole thing, Dr. Doom? Why The Thing?
I have puzzled over this for nigh on to 58 years now, and I think that a lot of it is because I have always been a little bit bigger than most of the people around me. And I have found that awkward. People are always saying, oh, you're so lucky because you're so tall, or, you know, you're lucky you have such broad shoulders. And so, yeah, no, actually, I fall over things a lot, and I bump into people, and I knock things over, and I don't. I'm not finding it an advantage, really. I don't, yeah, it's hard for me to get comfortable in, you know, airplane seats and things like that. So I know that's part of why I was drawn to the guy who is a little bigger than, you know, everything in the world around him. Ben also, he struggles with being misunderstood. People are often scared of him. They don't, sometimes people, you know, see his face and they run away. And, you know, I think we've all felt like that sometimes. And and he's full of self-doubt. In the early days of the comic, and I'm so glad that in the new four that we've brought this back again, that the love of his life is this beautiful and immensely talented blind woman. And he believes, the poor goof, he believes that she loves him because she's blind. Well, of course, that's not why she loves him, but that makes sense to him. And that touched my little heart even as a kid. What a lovely idea that is. So, you know,
cool.
Yeah, love him. Yeah.
Cool. What a revolting development. But you know what's not a revolting development? Clarence, who is your number one?
No, well, he can be very revolting sometimes if you go and make him angry and he turns all green and stuff. So, man, again, like, it seems like most of our connections are, you know, dealing with our early introductions to a lot of these characters as we were younger. And, man, again, like the 80s, The Incredible Hulk was just out of this world on television. And I loved seeing, I think it was maybe even reruns when I was watching it, but
yeah, because it was the 80s. Yeah.
But man, to this day, when I think of the Hulk, I don't think of Mark Ruffalo. I don't think of Ed Norton. I don't think of Eric Bana. I think of Bill Bixby, and he will always be my Hulk. And of course, Lou Ferrigno as well as that iconic character on that series. And, you know, at that point, I didn't know a lot of Hulk's backstory and as far as how the character had evolved over the years. But, man, that TV show, that theme song made that my favorite character for so long, man. And I don't know how I like what they've done with them over the years, but I guess that is in line with a lot of the comics that have come out. But still, always the 80s Hulk, well, 70s/80s Hulk in syndication will be the one that I love.
Yeah. But, you know, you hit on something that I find very interesting. The time that this came out, other than changing, you know, from Bruce to Robert, or David, as they, you know, had it on here, that pretty much was the Hulk in the comics. I mean, it was Hulk Smash or no Hulk at all. There really wasn't the, oh, well, there's the multiple personalities. That didn't come until the late 80s, early 90s or mid 90s before you got into all of that. So there was literally Hulk Smash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Hulk was all, he was always at war with himself. Yeah. He was always at war himself, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. And I don't know any kid when I was growing up that didn't at some time or another say, you're making me angry. You won't like me when I'm angry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's such a great line that, yeah, then they cut it into the titles of the show after the.
Yeah, and I think that's an invention of the show.
Yep, agreed. But cool nonetheless.
I got to ask this, Clarence, because this was so much of my thing about the thing. But I mean, you're a big guy, too. Do you think that's part of what the thing about the Hulk is? Because I told my therapist not too very long ago that I have dreams about the Hulk. And he said, that doesn't surprise me because I know you're a sweet guy, but you're big enough that you could really hurt somebody if you wanted to.
Yeah, well, maybe now. But. You know, I think at some point in every kid's life, they may have been the one getting picked on.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I gravitate to the character, because, you know, you wish in that moment when somebody's doing you wrong or picking on you or whatever, you could just Hulk out and take care of the situation.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, I never really got the connection on the as far as him being big, because I think until I got like 18 and 20, I was pretty much smaller than everybody else.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know you then, so I would never have guessed.
Yeah, well, I'll take it back a little. 16, I had 15, 16, I had a bit of a growth spurt. So
yeah.
But I think you guys hit on something, because I think that is what is interesting about the Hulk, and I think that has kept the longevity going, is all of us have, for whatever reason, healthy or not healthy or what, there is suppressed anger, you know, of
yeah.
whatever, for, and it's different for every person. And that's one thing that, beyond some of the things that they have done to the character over the years that, you know, may not have been the best characterization, this idea that the way gamma radiation affects a person has a subconscious effect on that person. Hence, the She-Hulk, when she originally became She-Hulk, she was repressed, and She-Hulk wasn't repressed. He had a lot of anger that he had suppressed. Then, you know, the Hulk was smashed. So I think the whole concept of the Hulk is really, really interesting.
Lee, I want to ask you, like, which one of your characters that you feel has weathered the test of time the best? Mm. And, you know, I said the best as far as being in the consciousness of superhero today, and, you know, even how the character has evolved over time.
Yeah, it's a good question. I love the fact that I think people who don't read the comics, or, you know, are not interested in the franchise generally, they may be aware of some of these characters, but they don't really know them. I think people feel that they know who the Thing is. If you ask them what his catchphrase is, they'll know. And that really kind of is who he is. There's a time to clobber and a time to not clobber. You know? But man, when it's clobbering time, you know, it's on. And I don't know. It's been 50 plus years now. I think, it's been 58 years. I mean, it's... The Thing is still the Thing. What do you think? Do you think Spider-Man is still Spider-Man, and so on, or that people's sense of these characters has changed? I mean, Wonder Woman's been different every 10 years, so.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Spider-Man has mostly been the same from what I know. They haven't been too keen to go into any of the clone stuff or any of the weird sagas that he's had over the years. But of course, we did get the Spider-Verse movie, which I guess will kind of change things just a bit. I feel like from my experience, Spider-Man has been mostly the same. I don't know. We've had several iterations of Superman, all of them. Mm-hmm. I didn't think were great.
Right.
So I don't know.
Mm. But, you know, I think regardless, I think we're missing our point here. And what I mean by that is the simple fact, whether it's Wonder Woman changing, however she may change every 10 years or however many years, whether it's Superman flying around moving planets, or Superman being depowered and making him more relatable, to Ben Reilly, to Peter Parker, to the Hulk, to Luke Skywalker or any of the people that we have named, they have changed with generations, but the thing that they all have in common is they have been around for at least 30 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still relevant in some fashion today. And I think that is the connector, because for kids growing up experiencing Luke Skywalker now, they have a completely different take. And for a small kid, seeing Wonder Woman in theaters for the first time has a complete different take than I did in the 70s seeing her on TV. You know, and I just think that's the coolness about our list, is it has, these characters have evolved just as time has evolved. So
it's, because we're changing, it makes sense.
So I have a quick question before we wrap up. Do either of you have anyone that you did not put in your list that you would say is an honorable mention?
Clarence laughs.
Because I had like, oh man, I had like some just play around ones I was going to throw in just to make Kyle mad.
Okay.
Like, I'm a He-Man.
Right.
Darkwing Duck, you know, stupid stuff like that. Right. Yeah.
Go for it. No, serious.
No, I was total joking, man. Just joking around.
All right.
I have a serious one.
Okay.
I want to read you something from a Marvel comic book. From May 1969, this was. For many years, we here at Marvel have been trying in our own bumbling way to illustrate that love is a greater force than hate. Now, we don't mean that you're expected to go around like a pirouetting Pollyanna, tossing posies at everyone who passes by, but we do want to make a point here. Consider three men. Think about Buddha, Christ, and Moses. Men of peace, whose thoughts and deeds have influenced countless millions throughout the ages, and whose presence still is felt in every corner of the earth, men of goodwill, men of tolerance, and especially men of love. Now consider the practitioners of hate who have sullied the pages of history. Who still venerates their words? Where is homage still paid to their memory? What banners are still raised to their causes? Power of love and the power of hate. Which is most truly enduring? So, my friends, when you tend to despair, let that answer sustain you. Excelsior. My honorable mention superhero is Stan Lee.
Well said. And the universe clapped.
Yes.
Yes. Wow, that was deep.
Yeah. And that's one of his soapboxes. He would write something like that every month for a long time. You know, they would run in all of the Marvel comics of the time. And, and like that one, they often used to just blow the top of my head off and go, yeah, can't argue with that. And those were the thoughts and philosophies that were animating all of his creative work. The kinds of things that emerged from his collaboration with Jack Kirby. And, you know, and it's where Wakanda comes from. It's where Ben Grimm comes from. So there you go.
But imagine for a moment how radical that was. You were putting these radical, and for all intents and purposes, there were, I'm sure, quite many parents that did not like some of the soapboxes that Stan Lee did, that you're putting in teenagers' hands, preteens' hands. And it's just interesting that he is writing something so profound like that when you have Frederick Wortham writing Seduction of the Innocent practically around or right before the same time, so well said. And you know what? I think there's no better way than to end this episode than to say Excelsior.
Excelsior.
And for that, everyone, thank you for joining us. And we're going to forego the whole where else can we be found on the internet. Just look at our show notes. And with that, thank you for joining us, and Excelsior.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.